Good morning, everyone. Today is the 2nd of October. It's Monday morning. I hope you're having a good week so far. Mark is continuing to read in the Doctrine of Election, Chapter 11. He's ready for Part 4. Winding down to the end of this book, I think tomorrow we'll probably finish this book. If you're interested in getting a copy of this book, you can go to greatchristianbooks.com and grab yourself a copy. The Doctrine of Election, Chapter 11, Part 4. Let us also point out what a stabilizing effect the apprehension of this grand truth has upon the true servant of God. How much there is to dishearten him, the fewness of those who attend his ministry, the opposition made to those portions of the truth which most exalt God and abase man, scarcity of any visible fruits attending his labors of charge, referred by some of his officer closest friends, that if he continues along such lines, he will have no one at all left to preach the whisperings of Satan that God himself is praying on such efforts, that he is a rank failure and had better quit. These and other considerations have a powerful tendency to fill him with dismay or tempt him to trim his sails and float along the tide of popular sentiment. We know whereof we write, if we have personally trod this thorny path. Ah, but God has graciously provided an antidote for Satan's poison, an effectual cordial to revive the drooping spirits of his sorely tried servants. What is this? The knowledge that their master has not sent them forth to draw a bow to venture, rather be instruments in his hand accomplishing his eternal decree, though he has commissioned them to preach the gospel and all who attend their ministry, yet he has also made it plain in his word that it is not his purpose at all, or even that many should be saved thereby. He has made it known that his flock is Greek, a very little one, Luke 12:32, that there is only a remnant according to the election of grace, Romans 11:5, that the many would be found on the broad road that would lead to destruction, and only a few would walk that narrow way that leadeth unto life. It is for the calling out from the world of this chosen remnant, and for the feeding and establishing of them that God chiefly employs his servants. There's a due apprehension and personal belief of this which tranquilizes, stabilizes the minister's heart as nothing else will. As he rests upon the sovereignty of God, the efficacy of his decrees, the absolute certainty that God's counsel shall be fully realized, then he is assured that whatever God has sent him forth to do must be accomplished, and neither man nor devil can prevent it. Appalled by the ruin all around him, humiliated by his own sad failures, yet he perceives that the outworking of the divine plan is infallibly ensured. Those whom the Father ordained will believe, Acts 13:48. Those whom the Son died must be saved, John 10:16. Those whom the Spirit quickens shall be effectually preserved, Philippians 1:6. When the minister receives a message to deliver in the name of his master, he may rest with unshaken confidence on the promise. So shall my word be that goeth out of my mouth, it shall not return unto me void, but it not may shall accomplish that which I please, it shall prosper in the things whereunto I send it, Isaiah 55:11. It may not accomplish what the preacher wishes, nor prosper to the extent which the saints desire, but no power on earth or in hell can prevent the fulfillment of God's will. If God has marked out a certain person he brought into a saving knowledge of the truth in a particular sermon, then no matter how buried in sin that soul may be, nor how hardly he may kick against the pricks of conscience, he shall, like Paul of old, be made to cry, Lord, what wouldst thou have me to do? Here then is a sure resting place for the minister's heart. This was where Christ found consolation for when the nation at large despised and rejected him. He consoled himself the fact that all the Father gives me shall come to me. John 63:7. The value of this doctrine appears again in that it provides real encouragement to praying souls. Nothing so promotes the spirit of holy boldness, the throne of grace, as a realization that God is our God, that we are the people of His choice. There is peculiar treasure, the very apple of Zion. They above all people have His ear. Shall not God avenge His own elect, which cried day and night unto Him? Luke 18:7. Surely He shall do so, for they are the only ones. He supplicated Him in meekness, presenting their request in subjection to His sovereign pleasure. Oh, my readers, when we are on our knees, how this fact that God sent His heart upon us from everlasting must inspire fervency and faith. Since God chose to love us, can He refuse to hear us and let us take courage from our predestination and make more earnest supplication? But know that the Lord has set apart Him and is godly for Himself. The Lord will hear when I call unto Him. Psalms 4:3. But no, fools will not learn, therefore they must again and again be told the same thing, especially when it is such a bitter truth, which to be taught them this, the fact that the godly are the chosen of God, are by distinguishing grace, set apart and separated from other men. Election is a doctrine which when renewed, man cannot endure, but nevertheless is a glorious and well-attested truth, or one which should comfort the tempted believer. Election is a guarantee of complete salvation, argument for success to the throne of grace. He who chose us for Himself will surely hear our prayers. The Lord's elect shall not be condemned, nor hear their cry be unheard. David was king by divine decree, and we are the Lord's people in the same manner. Let us tell our enemies to their faces they might fight against God and destiny when they strive to overthrow our souls. C.H. Spurgeon. Okay, well, thank you, Mark. We'll probably finish this book tomorrow, and then we'll decide what the next book, Mark, we're going to have Mark read. I haven't decided yet. We'll figure it out. Have a good day.